We'll hear lots from the Fed this week. From Marketplace, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer in for David Brancaccio. This will be a busy week. We've got more earnings reports, plus speeches from Federal Reserve officials. Julia Coronado joined us now to talk about what's ahead. She's founder and president of Macro Policy Perspectives. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
So let's talk bank earnings first. Some of the biggest banks are doing really well, but they don't think the good times are going to last. So what's going on?
Well, a couple of things. One is that the long-term interest rates have risen a lot. That can be good for banks because they can charge more, but shorter-term interest rates are still higher than longer-term interest rates. So money's expensive. They have to pay more to their depositors. And then secondly, they're looking at loan losses as commercial real estate, delinquencies that we're starting to see on credit cards and car loans start coming through. So it's a rough road ahead for banks.
And in the week ahead, we're going to have just a parade of Federal Reserve officials speaking, including Fed Chair Jerome Powell on Thursday. What do you think we're going to hear from them?
I think we're going to hear a repetition of the message that they may not be done yet, but they may be patient right now because, again, longer-term interest rates have risen quite a lot. And many Fed speakers have told us that that's going to do some of their work cooling the economy for them.
Because, of course, the Fed has been raising interest rates to cool off the economy and stamp out inflation, get it back to 2%. We'll see. Also on Wednesday, the latest numbers on housing starts will be released. What is that going to tell us about the housing market?
Well, we've seen some reaction to higher rates to this most recent leg up in interest rates in builders' sentiment, in mortgage applications. So we may see sort of some softness in building activity and new building activity as a reflection of that last mile higher in interest rates.
All right, we'll have to see. That was Julia Coronado, also a professor at the University of Texas, Austin. Thank you, Julia.
My pleasure.
Members of well-established unions, from Hollywood writers and actors to auto workers and healthcare professionals, have walked off the job in recent months. But more employees are banding together to create unions, too. Data from the National Labor Relations Board released on Friday shows the number of union petitions filed in the past year rose 3%. That's on top of a whopping 53% increase the year before. But more union petitions don't immediately mean more union members. Marketplace's Henry Epp has more.
The tight labor market is making workers more comfortable with circulating petitions to unionize, says Gordon Lafer at the University of Oregon.
People are less scared about being fired than they normally would, which is normally one of the biggest things that makes people hold back.
But a petition is just the first step in a process that a lot of union efforts don't complete. There is a union election, then contract negotiations, Lafer says.
There's fall off at every one of those stages.
Under President Joe Biden, the NLRB, which oversees that process, has become more labor-friendly. But with an uptick in petitions, they're facing a larger workload, says the agency's general counsel, Jennifer Abruzzo.
We are under-resourced. We are underfunded. So it does put a strain on us.
And former NLRB chairman Mark Gaston Pierce says more union drives are likely because of disruptive technologies like AI and electric vehicles.
New technology has caused workers to have to rally to take a stand and mark their space.
That gives unions a strong case, he says, even if getting a contract remains difficult. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
As the conflict between Israel and Hamas continues, social media companies are having to deal with more misinformation about it, like doctored images and mislabeled videos. Last week, the European Union said it will investigate X, formerly known as Twitter, over how it's handled content related to the war. And now TikTok says it's assigning more staff to combat disinformation. The BBC's Mariana Spring has more on that.
Anyone who has been using social media over the past week, I'm sure, has probably encountered some kind of disinformation or misleading content. And it's everything from old clips from different conflicts or wars where people are suggesting this is actually the situation unfolding in Israel and in Gaza. There are video game clips people again are suggesting of the violence. And then there's also some really sinister narratives kind of undermining, denying violence for which we have evidence. So suggestion that some videos of Israeli hostages who we've verified, we know they're civilians, that these false claims are suggesting they're not civilians, that they're actually soldiers, or even that they're acting, they're staging it. And again, there's one kind of quite nasty clip I saw over the weekend using a video of a makeup artist in Palestine. She was filmed for a news report back in 2017, but people were using that clip to suggest that she was actually trying to do people's makeup in Gaza, and that examples of people being hurt, injured, killed were not real. So it's been a real sort of wave of disinformation and hate. And as ever, that means the pressure is on the social media companies to get on top of it.
That was the BBC's Mariana Spring. President Biden heads to Colorado later today. He'll be touting his clean energy policies. The Inflation Reduction Act includes hundreds of billions of dollars in clean energy incentives. The president will tour CS Wind, the world's largest facility for wind tower manufacturing in the town of Pueblo. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.